This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Well, good morning, good friend. I am, it's really wonderful to see you all come out today. I'm very happy that you could. And especially in this unsettled weather, it was supposed to be really a lot of thunderstorms, and then that moved on. Now it'll be later, maybe. But anyway, you made it up here, up to the mountain, in the wind and the fog and the rain, whatever rains you had along the way. I certainly had some rains as I was getting here. So, and especially this center is held together, and I especially want to thank the people who are holding it together. Amanda, who's our wonderful everything at Jikoji, but today serving particularly as the doan, the bell ringer and timekeeper for us, so that we don't have to think about time. We can just settle into our meditations. And also Mike, who was the official Tenzo today and orchestrated everything. I know, I'm not sure he'll be here to join us for lunch because he had another appointment, but he had helpers also. So thanking those people who were here and helping in the kitchen too, so that we can gather some for lunch and get to know one another a little better. The fact that we're all here is why I say we're all good friends. We come here, we're already in a place of being a good friend to ourselves and to others. So even in the changing circumstances of these storms that keep on coming and coming, Jikoji holds itself together. We had a scheduled speaker, a good friend and a wonderful speaker who practiced Zen in Japan for several years and studied it, particularly women's Zen. That's Paula Arai. But she was left without power, and that where she lives in the Santa Cruz Mountains, I know that can go on for quite a while. I know our teacher, Angie, who used to live up in the mountains, Angie Boisevan, who started and helped start this center, she was without power for 6 days one time. So Paula will speak with us again later in the spring, in March, and I urge you to come to that meeting. It's March 5th, it's on our website. So that it's a bit of a theme for me today was the weather and the weather outside us and the weather inside us. And also a little bit about beginner's mind. We had very many people who were new to meditation today, and that's really wonderful that you took the step to come out and check it out here. So we had so many that we're going to have shifts, but we couldn't fit them all in the Zendo at one point. So some had to wait, and then some just came into the Zendo and really just stepped in. So to all of you, thank you so much for being here and coming out. And I'll say a few words about Zazen meditation practice and beginner's mind, which Suzuki Roshi said is really the best kind of mind. No matter how long we've practiced, it's always the best to enter each meditation as well as each moment of our lives with a kind of an openness and a not knowing even maybe the form of stepping in, but that's all right. Speaking of knowing, as long as we're alive, we have these gifts of awareness, knowing in many senses, but just in the sense of simple awareness from our whole body, mind, and heart. Knowing where we are, knowing what we smell, what we hear, what we taste, what we see, and knowing our groundedness, our being, what our being here means. And that's really hard to put into language. It's a mystery. And that's why we come and sit down and practice, where we let our minds and we let our sense of having to put things in words just be still for a while. Just sit and be with our breath, which sustains us every moment of our lives. Every moment. It's so simple, we're just not aware of it very often. So it's good to tune into that and really know at that deep level that it's breathing, which we are literally not in control of, that sustains us. So we're not in control of a lot that's outside us, for example, the weather, for one thing, but many other things too in our societies, in our families, and many places. But we also do have a lot of choices, and that's where our awareness, and we're tuning into our awareness, can help us see what choices we do have. We have the gifts of choosing, no matter how difficult or how unknown our circumstances. And that's, I'm making kind of a general statement of what our earliest ancestor teacher, Shakyamuni Buddha, said over 2,600 years ago, when we chanted our thanks really in the morning echo, it's called in Soto Zen. We chanted the names of some of our ancestors, just a few of our ancestors. He was the first one in this particular tradition of knowing. There are other traditions, but we're practicing in this one. He also said clearly that our life is not easy, that we have tendencies. He also said we have tendencies that make it difficult for us. And in spite of those things, that life is not easy for any human being, no matter what society or what era you live in, that we also can have this awareness, and we can choose to live in harmony with our own life and with all of life, whether we're in prison, whether our home is swept away in the floods, we still have choices about how we meet those situations. And he also said there is a path that we can follow, practices, which is what we're doing, the main one of which is meditation, that can help us see how to live in harmony. So these teachings are followed by all the Buddhist traditions, and their differences in the way they show up, the way they come out, because we live in different historical eras, we live in different cultures, etc. But those foundations support us all. And this tradition, the Soto Zen tradition, is expressed for me really very clearly and deeply by Bodhidharma, who came from India to China and then Dogen came from Japan to China and found these teachings to carry on, spread them wherever they were. And Dogen particularly emphasizes simplicity, just sitting down. And since we had so many people, I thought I'd speak a little bit about what Dogen says. Zen is an embodied practice. It's our whole body, mind and mind, which of course the body includes the mind and the heart, the heart in Chinese and Japanese, it's the heart mind. They're all together. It's not the mind separated as the intellectual mind. So it's a little maybe, it's hard to put that in specific cultural language, but we can each feel it. We each know it. He has a number of talks about Zazen, about meditation practice. And one is called Recommending Zazen to All People. And this talk, he says, stop searching and chasing after words. Take the backward step and turn inward. Your body mind of itself will drop away. And I take that to mean your small sense of yourself. So even if you, whoever, or me, Carolyn, feels pain, there's still a way that when you're sitting in meditation, you don't identify with that pain, the small sense. You know that everyone feels that pain, whether you think that to yourself or not. Everyone does feel pain at some point or other in human life. Dogen goes on to say, your original face will appear. What is that, your original face? Is it the face I see in the mirror? Is it what I look at in the morning or whenever I look at it? Another way to say that is your original face is your Buddha nature. And what does Buddha nature mean? Well, again, we each have our own way of knowing that. And it's, for me, it is that larger sense that you are connected with all other life, with all of other life, whatever form that may take. It's that nature that recognizes that. We don't need intellectual explanations like for the cosmos or connections or societies or any of that, although it's perfectly fine to have those interests and to have, we use our minds, of course, we use our intellect, our intelligence. That's a great gift for us too. But often, and maybe particularly in this culture and other cultures, we confuse that knowing with this deeper Buddha nature kind of knowing. Really what we want to know is how to live in harmony. That seems certainly in Buddhist teaching the most important thing. So Dogen's words were very, that was maybe a little not as straightforward, but he goes on to really talk about the body and the posture. And he says, what you need is a quiet place and a mat and a round cushion on top of the mat. So this is, we can perhaps take those things anywhere, or we can have a place in our home to do that. And we can also do it with others in the Zendo. And we don't even have to have that, actually. We can sit out under a tree or at the beach and without a cushion and just get comfortable in our bodies. Just really have that sense of relaxation, which is helped by specific posture things that Dogen talks about. He says, you know, an upright back, which is what the cushion helps. But you sit on the front edge of the cushion, the back helps support the natural curve of the spine upright and at ease. So the spine isn't rigid, ramrod, like it's actually at ease. And the breath also helps a sense of ease. We're breathing in and out with that slight movement all the time, even when we're sitting very still. The weight forward on your pelvis and your knees below your hips. You can also do this in a chair or in a stool, so you don't have to have a round cushion. If a chair works and it's easier for you to get into that comfortable, relaxed posture, then that's what will be good to do. And your shoulders are back and down. And your ears are in line with your shoulders and your nose is in line with your navel. So you're not like this. And you're not like this with your chin up. Or you're not like this with something down. So he talks very specifically about these things in this teaching. And then this mudra, he suggests, or he says, this is what you need, with your right hand supporting your left hand and your thumbs barely touching in front of your energy center around your navel, in whatever way is comfortable for your shoulders to be and your back to be and your breathing to be. And each of us needs to figure that out for ourselves. Also, Dogen says, rest the tongue, the tip of the tongue against the roof of the mouth with your lips easily closed, and keep your eyes open and downward and breathe gently through the nose. Then he says, and think not thinking. This is a big question. In fact, we had some questions in the small Zendo in the introduction, because of course we do think, and our thinking can get quite oppressive for us. And so what do you think in meditation? Think not thinking. How do you do that? There's a time when we can each sense, I felt it, I'm sure you have in some way, or you know that there's that possibility of being so at ease that the thoughts may come or go, which is typical, they do, or you realize you haven't been thinking. Often it happens when you're in a quiet, comfortable place and in meditation, but it can be anywhere. It can be walking. It can be standing on a sidewalk in a big city and looking at a lot of people going back and forth. And you're just taking it all in, but without thinking. Or in sitting under a tree, another beautiful place to think, not thinking. So Dogen helps too, like how to do this beyond thinking, he says. In other words, not analyzing what we're thinking and not getting caught up in our storylines of, especially when it's a small me that's saying, oh, he did this or she did that or I did this, or you know, like not repeating the old stories and not making up new stories. But simply seeing that it's the nature of thoughts to come and go. Thoughts are part of us, they just come and go. But we don't need to hang on to those thoughts, grip onto them. That's what takes us away from being aware of everything else that's going on in our life and the life around us. We don't have to believe our thoughts, and we don't have to make up the stories. our minds just produce thoughts like our stomach produces digestive juices. It's just part of what who we are as human beings. So Koban Chino, who founded this center 40 some years ago, had a wonderful expression about thinking. And he said, when you hear your thoughts knocking at the door of your mind, greet them, but don't invite them in for tea. So just let them come and go. Acknowledge them gently. So the stormy weather of our thoughts is usually our emotions, which are, that's more like the heart mind. That's where the body and the mind meet, and they can meet in many ways. They can meet in very pleasant ways that we get caught in our thoughts, fantasizing about how wonderful that was or how wonderful it would be, or very unpleasant, memories or thoughts or fantasies. That's like these storms. Those emotions, that stormy weather blows through too. Sometimes when we're in them, they feel so powerful that we think they're never going to go. But we can just hold them lightly, acknowledge them. Not that we're going to denying anything. That is never a way to be in harmony. If we have difficult thoughts, we can acknowledge them. We can acknowledge very painful, whether it's a memory or whatever it is, but we don't have to dwell on it. We can let that go. Pain in our body, pain in our heart, pain in our mind, all of those can be released. And of course, a really simple, powerful way, which Dogen emphasizes again and again, is to simply return to simple breathing. Return to being aware of our breathing, which never fails us until we don't know when. But we're not there yet. That would be a very different moment. So I thank you very much for your attention. And I always encourage you, and I hope you will continue this discussion. I've had a lot to say, and I'd really like to hear what you have to say. I'd like to close with a gatha, which is a short verse, a short poem to remind us about meditation. So this is from very early times in Shakyamuni Buddha's time. People were writing gathas or spontaneously speaking gathas. And that tradition has continued on. And particularly the Zen tradition has a lot of wonderful short verses about meditation. So this is called Zazen. Fingers by belly, breath flowing through, attending words in the mind like stones in a crown, resounding the day, resounding the night, resounding the sea in our blood. Thank you very much. And please speak as you're called to, and I will look around here and online and see who wants to speak. Thank you.
Thank you for your talk. Talked about facing the inevitable suffering that we all out in different ways. But there is a certain earnesty to fitting and to sort of then in general, what role does joy play in that, or can it play?
Joy plays a really big role, and but joy, we can't will joy to come. It comes in its own time, in a way like suffering does, although suffering is a part of us. But joy, that's also one of the four ennobling truths that I briefly paraphrased. That's the one that we do live in harmony. There is suffering. There are causes of suffering beyond the ordinary pains, and those are mainly about clinging on. So joy arises, and that's what continues us on through our whole life, to keep meditating, to keep practicing, as Shakyamuni Buddha did. Once he had his big insight, he never stopped. So, and that joy arises from the continuation of being simple, being with our breath and not holding on. And the joy also spreads out from us. Not even in words or roles necessarily or what we do in life, but it's in one of those things that, again, is hard to say, but we can feel it. It's palpable, and others feel it too. So that is the harmony, the joy. That is, you could say, it's dangerous to say this. So the purpose of meditation. It's dangerous to say, because then people get goal-oriented, and it doesn't. Well, I began with it. Just keep practicing. And it's a beautiful question. Thank you so much. Karen.
Actually, I think Beverly had her hand up before me.
Oh, okay, Beverly.
that's kind of you. my question is, why in Zen do you keep your eyes open, especially when you're usually facing a wall? And if you're at home, should you be facing a wall?
Thank you, Beverly, for these very practical questions, although the whys are always the difficult questions. I would say from my experience, there are two things. Either way can work, but in Zen, it's helpful to not get into a sort of a hypnagogic state where you're just kind of zoning out. So your eyes being open, but at soft focus. And the wall is a neutral zone. The wall is just often, if you don't, you know, a simple wall. And when you're sitting down on the ground particularly, but even in a chair, you're just about 45 degrees angling your eyes down and soft focus. So it's that neutrality, like the breath, like that doesn't... you're not looking at anyone or anything, which can cause our attention to go away from simplicity. And keeping the eyes open does help us stay awake, and it helps us not to get in this kind of zoned out state where we're kind of not thinking, but we're not aware of where we are. In fact, it's I began practicing in insight meditation, which there you usually do close your eyes. But people would ask the questions, well, I'm falling asleep. And in the early Buddhist teachings also, Shakyamuni Buddha said, okay, what do people would ask him when they came to sit around in the forest with him? And He would say, okay, open your eyes. That's the first thing. If that doesn't work, there are other things. But so those are what I can offer as answers to your questions. Thank you. So, Karen, I think you're next.
So yeah, I was inspired. Well, thank you for your talk today and bringing us back to the, you know, the basic posture and these basic hints. I was inspired by the first question with the question, what does compassion have to do with it?
Well, that's it's. I guess I would just give the same answer I gave to the joy question. It is part of the practice, and it's something that comes up naturally, compassion, and that's related to what I said earlier and what I have learned from all my teachers, is that arises from practice. We have that within us. That's within us. So that's just a word to say what's, you know, that okay, we can say that this feeling of the nature of being connected with all things and knowing that they feel everything we feel, joy and pain, you know, that arises, and then that can actually cause action or a feeling. I mean, it can just cause feelings, but it can also, with awareness, you can make a choice to help others in a certain way, in a way that we could say is compassionate. So compassion is, it's a big subject, and I don't want to go on too long about it to give other people a chance to speak, but it's definitely something that arises from our practice, an aspect of our Buddha nature, that when we sit down and with awareness keep practicing. So thank you for that question. And there's Akbar.
Yes, good morning, or afternoon, I guess it's a few minutes after 12 now. Thank you very much for this talk. I am having problem doing my activities mindfully. A simple question is, how do you till your garden mindfully?
How do you till your which?
Your garden, or any activity. Just a simple task of turning your garden and planting your garden. How do you do that mindfully?
Oh, well, that, thank you for that question. That's one that delights me, because I really enjoy gardening. So it's being with the whole body mind sensation. You can choose one if you like. You can focus on a particular sense door. So the senses give us, we have six senses. We have, you know, which we chanted in the Heart Sutra, you know, seeing, hearing, tasting, touching, smelling, and the mind is another sense. All of these make up what we know at different levels as human beings. So in gardening, well, their gardening is huge, but so there's the mind, which in selecting the seeds, for example, or deciding where to put a plant, but also in the gardening itself, in, let's say, planting or watering or weeding, if you do that, whatever you do, feeling your hands touch the earth, that is also a really powerful practice in itself. Feeling the earth, just sitting down on the earth is one of the aspects of earth practice. So, and also in any activity at work, you know, your relations with people, there are just being aware of where your mind is, Are you, you know, in discourse, we often are trying to figure out what someone says or judging what they're saying, or instead of just being right there listening, hearing. So tuning into the sense door of hearing, noticing your hearing, noticing when you eat that you're tasting and smelling. So I hope these are some pointers or activities.
Yeah, very helpful, but I have a follow-up question that if you take this to a little abstraction, for example, is problem solving, some mathematician is working on a problem and they are just deep in their thoughts and oblivious of what's going on around them. Is that a mindful activity as though they are really highly concentrating on their thinking and activity? Would that be a mindful activity? They are present, but in a different world, probably.
Yes. Yes. Well, there are differences of opinion in Buddhism about that. But it is, as you point to and use the word, up our concentration. So some people make distinctions between concentration and mindfulness. And Zen does that less. There's so that can actually, of course, be a if you're deeply engaged in your activity, if it's a concentration of problem solving, such as you mentioned, that is for me, there mindfulness and concentration are just two sides of the same coin. You know, they both work together. So you are mindful of that thought. You're mindful of your thinking process in that realm where you're concentrated. So hope that.
Thank you very much. That was very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you for the question. Anyone in the room? Yes.
Thank you for a bit of a talk. So I have a question about having preferences. So how to have no preference?
Well, the first thing is to know that you have preferences, and then it's just a preference, it's just a thought, and you know you can explore. Every person has to figure this out for themselves in a way, but you can explore. It's interesting to do this sometimes, but don't make it a practice that you have to do all the time. But why do I have this preference for this? And some are just preferences. You know, some of us like sour taste and some of us like sweet taste. And so it's fine. It's okay to have preferences in that sense. It's when you hold on to the preferences in situations where it's causing you at a certain level unhappiness to hold on to them. I really want things to be this way when they're not that way. So that's kind of the tricky part about preferences. In and of themselves, they're not a problem.
I have a question about intentions.
About which?
Intentions.
Okay.
So when you have an intention, I understand, you know, to hold it lightly and to kind of recommit to it over and over again, especially when we fail at the question is around setting an intention and finding the right intention for yourself to set, let's say, for the coming year or for this day. I have lots of conversations with people that say, where do I look for my own intentions? Like, where do I look for a good intention that will lead me through my day or the year? So, you know, what are realms that we can go and look for an intention, or will it show up by itself?
Well, the fact that you're here and people come here, that tunes them into where their intentions are. There's not a... thank you for that question. It puzzled me when I first started the emphasis on in Buddhism, in the Buddhist practices I did anyway. Some Buddhist practices don't even talk about intention. Mm-hmm. And from my understanding. Zen doesn't talk about that too much either. You tune into the practices, the simplicity of tuning into your own heart mind, so that the intentions will arise. The intentions will be, but it's I don't know of a way to set an intention except to listen to yourself. And if you're not sure what your intention is or confused about your intention, then maybe just let that setting the intention go. There's too much emphasis on having to get it, having to, you know, then it becomes kind of an issue, kind of a problem.
Checklist almost, right? It can easily turn into a checklist.
Thank you. I think we had Randy, and I'm sort of, I have two eyes, but they're not, I have to turn my head. I can't look at one eye on this side and one eye. So I think we have Randy and then Toby and then Karn. Okay. Randy.
This might be splitting hairs, but when you were talking about this, the verb that came up in my mind was doing. Doing. We're always doing, but I was thinking about when there's certain things that I do so much and have done so many times that I don't think about it. It's like my thought process is kind of very, I don't know, limit. It's I just don't need it. It's almost like I'm moving from another place than from thought. And one of the things is in my studio working with clay. And then also sometimes with sitting, you know, if you do it enough, it's just sort of, you know, and thoughts do come up and stuff, but it's just, I guess the question is carrying that mind, that ability, or I don't know, just into my everyday world. Where I'm maybe at the gym or the grocery store and I'll see people and my mind just starts, you know, it'll start spinning on who they are and that, you know, all this stuff that's just totally unreal. But I guess it's just trying to carry that into my everyday life beyond the little things that I feel very comfortable with. So I don't know what my question is, but it's somewhere in there.
Thank you, Randy. Well, how what words we put on it is what works for us. And of course, there is that place where you're so familiar and comfortable. But then, is that a habit, or you know? But it can also be creativity, as you point out. You know, it can be. In sitting, and it can carry off into your life at the gym and noticing people. Also, remembering that thoughts are just thoughts, preferences are just preferences, stories are just stories. So you are aware that you have this story of this person, and you know, we do that. We are story making beings. That's meaning making beings. We can't deny that part of us. So. Thank you for bringing in that element too.
Well, part of me is when I do that, I get pissed off at myself.
Well,
I mean, my mind starts spinning and go, what are you doing, Colonel? Jesus, you know, it's like I just need to slap myself in the face. It's, you know, I'm, you know, and I don't do that all the time, but I'll find myself doing this on, gee whiz, where are you going? But I guess that's what the mind does. I don't know. But that's why we sit. I don't know.
Well, that is a different level. Yeah. When you start, then you're doing like Shakyamuni Buddha had a great metaphor for that. That's the second arrow. You're hit with an arrow of suffering, but then you put something on top of it and you say, well, I'm doing this again. Zen has a precept that says, letting go of past mistakes. just that's kind of ego making, you know. Essentially just letting go of that if you can. And of course we do need to keep practicing, because it is hard to remember. It is hard to remember. I think that's why we listen to Shakyamuni Buddha, because he not only knew awareness and did it, but he could remember to do it in every moment. So, but we are not Shakyamuni Buddha. We are just getting in touch with our own Buddha nature. And it's all good. Excuse that cliche, but practice is good. Thank you. Toby, I think, or Karn, was Karn next? Okay, Karn.
Well, thank you for your talk. I always enjoy listening to you. And I just had some comments on some of the initial questions that came up around joy and compassion, and that we recognize the suffering in the world, and then we appreciate the earnestness of this practice. But what about joy? Or what about compassion? Where does compassion have to do? What does compassion have to do with all this? And at the beginning of the talk, I was appreciating very much your comment when you said that we are being, just by being here, we are being good friends to ourselves and one another and to others. So just by being here, we are being good friends. And related to that, I wanted to share that Dogen said that Zazen is a dharma gate of joy and peace. Mm-hmm. And he specifically mentioned joy and peace. Mm-hmm. And Kogan would also talk about, and other teachers would also talk about, bodhicitta, that there is this bodhicitta or a way-seeking mind that you have to, that kind of like compels you to feed itself either by just sitting or studying the dharma. Like the point, the comment I wanted to make was that it's not just like the suffering that gets us to sit, or it's not just the joy that gets us to sit. It's kind of like just this thing that, oh, there's suffering and there's joy, all of these things. So what is the way? It's kind of like that way-seeking mind that gets us to push into it. Composite of suffering and joy, and just like finding the way. Want to share.
Thank you so much, Karn. Thank you so much. Peggy.
You can't hear.
Sorry. Yeah. Obviously, I'm brand new to this, and I want to thank you so much for your talk. It's really phenomenal. I do have a question, and I was wondering if you could speak to our life's purpose and how we know that we are fulfilling that.
Slow, stop, sit, still, see. Thank you. That's a very big question. And the words I just said, those few words, another gatha, are the way to know and to know how and what Karn just said in Zen, there is this bodhicitta. One way you could call that is the mind that's always curious, alive to what how each of us is as human beings, and we keep slowing, stopping, sitting, stilling, and seeing that throughout our whole lives. And the moments of knowing come and they accumulate as we continue in that way to a kind of a deep confidence or a faith that we do know the purpose of our lives and we are fulfilling it. And that does not mean that doubt does not arise. That's another part of life, and that's another. So we're like this giant, like those disco balls, right? We have so many facets. And when we slow, stop, sit, still, and see, you know, we get to see these different little facets of just this one embodied heart mind. And as we continue that, we see more and more, and we just keep revolving around until we don't know the last breath, I guess. So thank you for that really profound question.
I greatly appreciate your talk, especially coming down to the fundamentals, which can seem sort of lost sometimes in Dharma talks, I find. And one of them to me is what you say about breath. You mentioned heart, mind, but body, breath. And as you practice anything, I think you become more aware of it just because of the repetition, I suppose. So watching your breath, watching the forms seem to me an avenue towards knowing what's happening, like your breath. So one of the issues I deal with quite a lot is my anger. And I can feel this physically. And if I just, I can say, oh, I can watch, in fact, sort of like a witness sort of metaphor. I see my hands are very nervous. I'm talking to someone, I'm very nervous. And I realize, you know, I'm under a certain form of stress that I have induced. No matter what the situation is around me, I am inducing this. And I come back to this artificial environment in my mind, in a way, sitting, lots of sitting, and I'm sitting again, but I'm not here. My breath, I realize my breath is very quick, short, like what has happened maybe in the sitting practice here. And that to me, without it being something to hold on to, which is why this is such an unusual sort of practice. It's not goal oriented, and just about everything else I've done seems goal oriented. So that in itself requires a certain sense of faith, I suppose, or trust that this practice will help you, I suppose. So I like what Randy says. I don't really know what I'm trying to say. Right. But I think that was important in Dharma talks specifically, because we're using language. We have this paradigm of a triangle where there's a teacher, and that this is to come back to this, these fundamentals. As I said last time, I really appreciate you doing that. Thank you.
Thank you, Todd. I could make a comment that I thought what you said about noticing the different qualities of breath is very wonderful, and very helpful to us. You know, when you notice the quality of, or your body, your hands, when we notice those, like with Akbar's question, when we tune into our senses, then we get a lot of information that's not really from a constructed way, or to use your word, a paradigm way. We know that from within inside ourselves, and that's it's really helpful to us.
Because which happens is some of these questions is basically in the moment, how do you want to live? So that's happening all the time. Compassion, joy, how do you want to live? And it feels like do I want to have tension in my neck? It's mainly an area of politics. I carry tension, many people do. Do I want to really be like this in my life? Does that bring joy, compassion, all the great, wonderful things and direction in my life? Do I want to go like this? I'm directed.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.